Hello,
everyone. Yes, Pam, hang on. I'm just on the line. This is Chris Danish, your host of Voices of Women. I'm the founder of Women of Wisdom, which has been empowering women through an annual conference every February since 1993. At the conference, we have authentic, intimate, transformative, and healing experiences where we share our stories, witness each other, and transform our personal and collective consciousness. Our 27th annual WOW Conference is in Seattle this February 15th through the 17th, and our theme this year is Spark Our Creative Fire, Dance in Power and Beauty. You can attend one day, Saturday or Sunday, or both days, and you can experience in-depth workshops on creative arts, spirituality, body, mind, spirit, healing, movement, manifestation, and so much more. So we invite you to join us, be witnessed, valued, and inspired, and just check out the schedule at womenofwisdom.org and look for the link for the 2019 conference. Also check out our bestseller, Amazon bestseller and award-winning book, Women of Wisdom, Empowering the Dreams and Spirit of Women. It's a reflection of the conference through talks by many of our gifted authors of the Divine Feminine and art, poetry, and stories. So today I'm interviewing Pamela Gerke. Pamela has been part of Women of Wisdom Conference as composer and music director for many years, including Shauna Carroll's Goddess Chant concert in 2000 and Pamela's original opera, Temple Dreams, in 2001 and Welcome to the World in 2002. So we're excited to have Pam back at the conference with a new musical she wrote and directs, Nightingale, a musical regarding the life and passion of Miss Florence Nightingale. And it's going to open our 27th annual conference on February 15th at North Seattle College, and you can register at womenofwisdom.org. And for more information about Nightingale, see www.heartshealtharts.org. And the musical is sponsored by Washington State Nurses Association, the leading voice and advocate for nurses in Washington State. So welcome, Pam.
Hi.
Hi. Glad to have you today. Let's start with your story. How you became passionate about writing musicals.
Yeah, I was reading a book by Julia Ward Howe, who was a prominent 19th century social activist, and she was visiting the Nightingale family in Britain, and she mentioned meeting young Florence Nightingale and how struck she was by her intelligence and intelligent charisma. And I thought, who is this woman? Because I was only aware of this sort of image of Florence Nightingale as being this sweet kind of do-gooder nurse. So I started reading adult biographies and realized, oh my gosh, she is amazing. She did so much more than just create the profession of nursing, which is no small feat in itself, but she also influenced so many other spheres of society. And I was interested in how she was more ferocious and kind of a change maker than this kind of sweet image of the nurse. So I started reading about her and got interested in writing a musical about her because it's a fascinating story. And the story of her family is just as interesting too. So that made me kind of drew me into the story.
Mm-hmm. So let's go back before that, because you've written other musicals. What drew you to your interest in music as a child, or were you a young adult? When did you get started in working in music?
Oh, I always just loved it and was singing in the church choir growing up and whenever I got a chance to be in the high school musical or whatever. But, you know, I didn't really have the confidence in myself as a musician that I have now. I think a lot of it takes so much confidence on the part of the musician. So even though I felt the music, I was interested, I was not confident about my abilities. So I didn't major in it in college or anything. And it was only after getting out of college that I realized, oh, I'm an artist. That's who I am. And I always, always wanted to write musicals. And I still, that's my main passion. There's something that I just love about it. So I started working on my first musical when I was in my 20s. I am still working on that piece. And along the way have written several other pieces. And just so much fun for me. Something about that medium I just love.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and it's something that we enjoy so much at Women of Wisdom, and sometimes it's been a ritual theater aspect to it.
Yes, yes. We got really interested when we produced Goddess Chant by Shauna Carroll and realized we had some amazing ritual theater possibilities to that. And since then, we did Goddess Chant again at Women of Wisdom in 2012. The first one was in 2000, the second time in 2012. And my collaborator, Reverend Judith Laxer, and I, she and I really want to do it again because we want to just continue to build on the ritual theater aspect so that as a participant, you're not just a passive audience member, but you really get drawn into the spiritual aspect of music and theater. And I love that in, you know, whenever we can bring the arts into our spirituality, it just comes so much more alive for me. So we have worked on several pieces, Judith Lexer and I, Connie Amundsen, and many others, and have produced some of them at Women of Wisdom. We really thank Women of Wisdom for the opportunity to do that. As there's such a rich world of spirituality that can, and especially the divine feminine, it's just so juicy and wonderful for music and theater, so we want to keep doing more of that.
Yes, it brings the divine feminine alive in a whole different manner than listening to someone talk about it. You know, you get to experience it. That's what's been so special of having these performances at Women of Wisdom. And so now it's a different kind of a thing. It's not ritual, but it's a story about Florence Nightingale's story. And then, so how was it for writing the music? And I know you've been working on this for years.
Yes, I got interested in her around 2000. Then I started really focusing on writing the show in 2007. And then in 2009 and 2010, did some readings, performance readings. Then kept trying to get theaters interested and had to put it aside because I just couldn't get it produced. It's really difficult to get musicals produced. They're enormously expensive. They're complicated. They involve so many resources. And if you're not really in that world, it's really, really hard nut to crack. So eventually I put it aside a few years back, and then I just couldn't stop myself. I came back to it about 3 or 4 years later, and it was actually a really good process because by then I was able to take a really hard look at it. I had put it aside long enough that I could distance myself and look at it again and revise it. I ended up rewriting close to half of it, so it's in a much better place now. And then we did some staged readings last fall, and I felt that from the audience reaction, which was very positive, that it was ready to go for the fully staged production, which will be premiering at Women of Wisdom on February 15th.
Yes, that's exciting. So let's talk about Florence Nightingale. What aspects does she represent of the divine feminine? Because that's a big thing about Women of Wisdom is exploring the divine feminine within ourselves and all the many attributes of the divine feminine. And how does Florence Nightingale fit in that?
Oh, amazingly well. She really, really speaks to me as a aspect of the goddess. Two primary ways. The obvious one, of course, the nurse is the healer, such as, you know, a Kuan Yin kind of aspect or Green Tara. She brought, you know, so much light of healing to the planet. But she was also a fierce change maker, which makes me think of other kinds of aspects, like such as Kali, you know, because she destructed the old ways. That was what she was really doing. As much as she was building the new ways, she was destroying the old ways. So in her time, which was mid-19th century, they didn't even know about germs. They didn't know anything about washing hands. There was so much cruelty in the medical system and in the military medical system, which was where she was working in the Crimean War. And there was this old guard that had been in place for, you know, decades. This is how we run the army. This is how we run our medical system. And it was, this old ways were just completely obsolete, and that war was a really big mess. It was horribly horribly supervised. The command structure was made a lot of huge mistakes, and just what was really struck me in my readings about it was how the men suffered and died, and I really felt that so much. I could feel them calling to me, really, from the bottom of the Black Sea, where many of them ended up. They would be transported from the Crimean Peninsula over to hospitals near Constantinople, which is where Florence was located. And, you know, many of them died and were just thrown overboard. And I have this visceral feeling of their suffering, and they're calling out to me and to others to relieve their suffering. So she was a huge change maker in that way. She called the old ways into obsolescence. And, of course, she met mighty resistance, but she persevered. But it was a hard road to hoe. And it's still true today that change maker aspect of the goddess is working. But also we see how when we tell stories about women in history, they're often softened. So the image of Florence Nightingale that I was familiar with, and with a lot of people I know, is that soft, pretty, compassionate healer image. So that's what really got to me was, wow, she was a change agent big time and just did amazing things in her life. So that's what really got me interested in her as a divine aspect of the goddess.
Yeah, that's interesting you talk about, because our image of nurses even is, you know, the softer aspect of, and even today, they're the ones that are dealing more with the patients. They're the ones that sometimes have to stand up for the patients to the doctors, because they're there with the patients a higher percentage of the time than a doctor is. And so I can see that that's still relevant today for nurses. Have you been talking to nurses, or, and I know you're connected to Washington State Nursing Association.
Yes, I'm in touch with a lot of the nursing organizations and schools in the area, because I've been promoting this for quite a while, at least over a year now. And it's really interesting because the Institute of Medicine, which is a big, super big deal in this country, issued a report in 2010 called The Future of Nursing. And there's a big movement to uplift their goals, which is basically to raise the bar on the profession, just improve it in so, so many ways. And one of the ways that they recommend is that nurses have a greater involved in more decision-making, that they have an equitable position in designing and implementing healthcare solutions. And yet, even today, the people that are working on this campaign to uplift those goals find that it's in legislation, the physicians who are stopping the legislation that would increase nurses' scope of practice. So to me, that's just so interesting, because in the musical, you see Florence Nightingale dealing with that hierarchical command structure of the British Army, and that was, you know, 150 years ago, and yet it's still, you know, there's still particles of hierarchy and of the sexism that keeps women who are the largest percentage of nurses are women, not all, but mostly women. And that's kind of that sexism in our society that keeps nurses down. And I just hear through friends who are nurses that it's still true today, that nurses don't feel as empowered as they would like to be. They're not included in all decisions. A lot of times decisions come down to them from on high that they don't agree with, you know, and so it's still what Florence was dealing with is still true today, I think.
Yeah, it's amazing. And they work so hard, and they're, you know, underpaid, undervalued, and overworked. And, you know, I have friends who are nurses too. So, that's still the ongoing, I mean, that's why it's relevant for today. In all aspects, whether it's nursing or other fields, of women in this battle of standing up for their rights
standing up for what's correct and equality and equal pay and all that. You know, it's still a small percentage of women who are CEOs, and we've seen an increase in politicians just this year. That's good, but it's still not, you know, it's not 50-50 representing the, you know, percentages of male and females in our country, but it's an improvement. And I think more and more, because the Me Too movement and all this, there's more and more women going into politics. And I'm hope that that will translate into leadership in all the different fields, including nursing. As more and more women are in leadership roles, they can impact. And maybe this legislation with more women in Congress, you know, we can, that can move that. They would be more supportive of the nurses.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. And it's one of the Institute of Medicine's goals is that more nurses move into leadership. They're promoting that they join boards of directors, not just healthcare, but any kind of board of directors. Mm-hmm. There's a greater increase of education, more PhDs and master level nurses, so that we can have more nurse leaders. And they see that as one of the primary goals to bring nursing up. Develop leadership.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and more.
Florence Nightingale is a great example.
Yeah, good role model. And that's what Women Wisdom about is about building women leaders. You know, as we empower ourselves and find our voices, and that's coming together in our workshops where we connect with other women and hear stories, it strengthens our resolve of who we are and what's our gifts and what do we want to do in this world. And we can be a leader in many different, you don't have to be the leader of an organization. You can be just the leader of your life, a leader of what your gifts are, a leader in things that you're passionate about, and co-lead with other people. It doesn't have to be a scary thing, like, you know, because a lot of women will think, well, I'm not a leader, I'm not, you know, and women kind of tend to be in the behind the scenes. And so to witness this in a musical about someone who lived, you know, who was born 200 years ago. So this musical is being launched on the 200th anniversary of her birth.
Yes, well, it's actually in 2020, but we're starting the project now because we want to get a jump on it.
Yeah,
but yes,
okay.
There's been a lot of studies that show that when people have a role model, how much they develop their own proficiencies. So I think having more role models of strong leaders for women is really crucial. And then when you see it in a musical theater form, it just kind of brings it alive in a certain way, but still holds this role model in your mind. I think that's really important.
Yes, it's also, I have a sense of, it's like it's honoring her work. It's still going forward and honoring her, that she may not have gotten that much honor back then.
Well, she was very famous, but she also had to work from behind the scenes. So when she mm-hmm. was in the Crimean War, she was leading nurses for the first time, female nurses in the military. It was a new experiment. And they had just invented the telegraph. So for the first time, news about battles and what was going on in a war were being transmitted instantly through the telegraph. And then that gave people, it was an information technology revolution, huge. And so people were getting news and they were finding out about this, and reporters were writing about her, and soldiers would write home about Miss Nightingale. And so she, by the time she got back from the war, she was basically the most famous woman in Europe, probably in the whole world. So she was hugely famous. And yet, because she was a woman, she had to work behind the scenes. So she worked for, she lived 50 more years, and she worked most of that time in changing legislation and changing all kinds of structures in healthcare and society. But she always had to work through the men who were her allies, and they would come to her apartment, and here she was. She was an invalid. She'd become sick in the Crimean War and was ill for many, many years. So she's this bedridden spinster, as they called them, and these men would come to the door several times a day, and she'd pass off all her missives and her reports, and she was amazing. She was the driving force behind a lot of legislative changes in Britain, but you know, most people didn't know that because she wasn't, you know, present. She was behind the scenes. Her name wasn't even on a lot of these reports.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's that sounds very typical. So what do you want the audience members to experience at this performance of Nightingale?
Well, I'm really hoping that they get an emotional experience. I'd like them to be able to feel her drive to be who she really is, because I just know that's such a universal force. We all have this little thing inside us and go, oh, this is who I really am, and yet there's factors outside of us, our family, our society, or, you know, whatever, saying, oh, you can't do it, don't do it. And she really had a strong drive, even child, of working in nursing and hospital administration. And so she was, but her family was against it, and she was wealthy, British, Victorian, which meant she could not do any of those things according to society. So I want the audience to experience that feeling of knowing who you are, but not being able to be who you are, and fighting all these people saying you can't be who you are. And yet she persevered. So there's that one feeling. Another feeling that I would hope that my audiences experience is the feeling of the suffering of the men. Hasn't changed to this day. We have soldiers, both men and women, who are suffering all over the world. And a lot of it has to do with the incompetence of authority and just the basic nature of warfare itself. So I really hope that they have a feeling of connecting with that suffering and pain, so that they can, you know, have an experience of what it's like to be in a war as a soldier. And then the third thing is the emotional experience of holding to, she stuck to her guns, so to speak, and she persevered in that war and lobbied for the right way for the soldiers to be treated. But she was met with opposition at every turn by both the male military establishment and also many of the women who were involved were against her too. So there's that feeling of knowing what's right, but just, you know, having so many obstacles and yet facing them and going through it. So those are the three key things I'd like my audience to have an experience of that they could take with them, because those are all universals.
Yes, and it makes me think of, you know, also that resistance to change, because she was bringing about change. And for some people, that brings up fear. You know, you think of woman not supporting her, the fear of upsetting the apple cart, you know, or and all that. So, yeah, it's great to have this role model and somebody to live on, you know, 200 years. So who else? I mean, so it's kind of, you know, you have touched, you know, into the nursing profession, and it's natural for the nurses to be interested in this. But who else would be interested to hear her story?
Well, I think that she's a role model for all women in all the ways we've already discussed. I also think that what you mentioned, that the obsolescence of the old ways and facing change and making change, that's a universal that everyone can relate to. I think everyone can relate to the power of hierarchy and how it holds change back. We see a lot of that. And I think it's also something that everyone is interested in, is that what I said earlier about discovering one's own true calling and pursuing it even though there's obstacles along the way. I think that's really interesting. I also think the whole history of healthcare and the nursing profession is really interesting, that everyone should know about. Before Nightingale legitimized nursing, the nurses were, there wasn't really a nursing profession aside from religious orders. There was nurses in religious orders, but other than that, nurses were just the dregs of society. They were often alcoholics, prostitutes. They weren't, you know, it was just a horrible, horrible situation. And that's really interesting to me. So she created this whole legitimacy for the profession of nursing, and that women could be in a profession, because up until then, at least in Britain, but also true in the United States, there really weren't a whole lot of options for women of the middle class to have a profession, to have a job. It was just, you either were a governess, or you got married, or your father took care of you. I mean, there really wasn't a whole lot of choices. Another thing that's super interesting to me, I think everyone should know about, is the history of the sanitation movement. Back in Florence's time, during the Crimean War anyway, they still hadn't developed the germ theory. She instinctually knew that cleanliness was important. Clean hands, clean walls, clean sheets, clean, you know, clean towels, everything. But it's really interesting to think about how our culture has changed in terms of just recognizing sanitation. And it's still a problem in a lot of parts of the world. So I think that's really interesting to other people, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I was thinking, too, as I was at one of your readings this fall, and thinking about how it might change, especially young women, of what they might come to their minds of what they might do, of starting to look at what their gifts are and how they want to proceed, or they're stuck at work, or they're not doing well in this hierarchy of, you know, whoever their boss is, and it might give them some thoughts of how they might be able to proceed to improve their lives, improve their job situation, get on with doing what they really want to do. You know, that's a lot of things that happen at Woman Wisdom, is people get inspired to really take on what it is they're supposed to do in this lifetime. And at any age, I mean, we at every age, there's some transition going on, whether you're in your teenager, you're still in school, you're in college, in your 20s, in your 30s. And for people who are older, they're retiring, what's the transition that you're going through and what it is that you want to do now in your life? And so seeing somebody like Florence Nightingale really fight for what she believed in and was successful in becoming a strong advocate for, like you said, sanitation and taking care of soldiers and all that, that it would inspire women to step into what their calling is, because that's what she did, and that's what you get to witness in this musical that's so great about it.
Yeah. Yes. True.
Well, tell us a little bit about the process of writing and composing. You have a two-act musical. What's involved? It's quite an endeavor on your part.
Yeah. Well, it's really super fun for me. I don't know why, but I just love doing it. So it's always been a labor of love, and I call it my happy place. But it's very involved. I'm constantly going back and forth between writing lyrics, writing dialogue, researching some more. All of the lyrics of the songs and all of the dialogue, it's all based on research of what people really said about her, or what she wrote, or what people wrote about her. It's all taken from historical record, and it's all historically accurate. Then there's, you know, all the composing that goes on, and it can be very tedious, but I still enjoy it. I've written it at this point for 3 instruments, hope to build it up to a bigger band eventually, but it's just a lot of detail, and now I'm lucky to be working with a wonderful director, Rachel Renee, and so she's taken on a lot of it, and we have a stage manager, and people are taking on parts of it, like the sets and the costumes, and I'm kind of amazed that I don't have to do everything myself anymore, which is it's wonderful, and it's really different. So I'm working on the producer end of it, and arranging for our tour and all the details on the promotions and such. But the actual writing of the musical is, people ask me, how long does it take you to write? And I would have no idea, because when I'm in my artistic world, I have no idea what time is. So I know it's a lot of hours, but like I said, very enjoyable hours. And I'm lucky to have equipment. The computer is wonderful, because with the music programs. You don't have to hand write like I used to in the olden days. And if you want to change keys, it's just a push of a button, and you know, you can make these very professional looking scores very easily on the computer, and that's a big boon. The computer also helps me because it will play my scores, and I can even record it and use that for recordings of demos just straight off the computer, and it doesn't make any mistakes like I do when I'm trying to play it. So there's just a lot of involved in keeping everything current, and then when one thing changes, like I take out one measure of music, then everything has to get fixed in accordance. So it goes on like I'm
yes,
very excited about this cast.
Yeah, and I know,
cast.
And you have some professional singers, and yeah, they were great at the reading that I it was a music reading, so they were singing, wasn't just reading.
Yeah,
and some great and I assume actors too, that they're not just singing, they're acting this musical. So it's being produced. You created a nonprofit organization, Hearts, Health and Arts. Can you tell us a little bit about Hearts?
Yeah. So I've been trying to get this and other musicals produced for decades, and just always running into a wall. It's very difficult to get even somebody to read it or look at it in theater companies. And then I had this idea of getting a major grant from a foundation to take it on tour to nursing organizations. So I really started Hearts Health and Arts with that in mind, to be a producer for Nightingale and then go on to other things. We didn't get the big grant, so then back to the drawing board. And so far, so good. I've been able to find grants and funding money and donations and sponsorship, like from the Washington State Nurses Association and others. So we're kind of cobbling it together with various sources of income to pay for this first tour and beyond. We hope to take our organization beyond the Nightingale Project. This is just our first project. We are some part of a field called Health Humanities, which is a field that's growing in the United States, even more so in the United Kingdom and in Canada. And what it is, it's the marriage between humanities, all humanities, and health. So, yes, medical world and the arts is sort of our focus right now, but Health Humanities actually covers all health in all society, and how do the humanities influence health in general? So it's a huge field, and we're narrowed down in our organization to the art, performing arts, and so we have plans for the future and other ways that we can bring health into society in general.
Yes, it sounds like a big field. I mean, you could go so many different directions. You know, health impacts a lot of things in our lives and in our culture and our society. And so that's great that you're. It sounds like you have a big vision there and moving forward and people to work with you. So please share your website where people can read about your performances.
Yes, it's the word hearts, plural. Health, arts, plural, heartshealtharts.org. Or you can also
Great.
Google Hearts, Health, and Arts, and it will come up right away.
Uh-huh. So that's great. Well, so everybody, want to remind you to, you can, for the conference, you can just buy a ticket for Friday night. Our ticketing for Saturday and Sunday workshops are separate from the Friday night, and men are included on Friday night. It's February 15th at 7:15. Our opening ceremonies for women will start at 6 o'clock. It's at North Seattle College. It's in one of the theaters there in the library building. So just go to womanofwisdom.org to order your tickets. We have student and senior prices. And, it's going to be a great opening for our conference. We're so excited to have it this year, Pam. So thank you for creating this for us. Not just for us, but for the world, but to have it be our
thank you for hosting. Yeah, I really appreciate how Women of Wisdom has supported my arts and other arts and theater. It's really wonderful. And just, you know, the marriage of the Divine Feminine with the arts has been a fabulous place, Women of Wisdom. Thank you.
Yes. Yep. Well, you're welcome, and we hope people will come and experience it. You can, like I said, you can attend Saturday, you can attend Sunday. It includes meals, it includes some community activities. We have a 2-hour lunchtime, so we have people doing some group activities after we eat. So, like, we have Vicki Dodd doing sound nutrition. She's a expert in sounding, and lots of other activities, inspirational speakers, little mini, like, TED Talks. We called them Jane Talks last year. And so, you know, registration includes the meals and includes Saturday night banquet, which we have a fabulous banquet planned with speaker Sakone Nimanya and singer, Afro folk singer, Naomi Wachira, is going to perform Saturday night. And that's part of your Saturday ticket or your 2-day pass ticket. So come join us. Check it out, womanofwisdom.org. So let's see. Today is... oh my gosh, we're just starting the week. I'm going to be interviewing people all week long and next week, so stay tuned. And I'll be posting it on the Women of Wisdom Facebook page. I post the day before of who's going to be on the show. It's often 1 o'clock, but there are some at other times during the day. So, and also I put the recordings on our website next to our presenters, so you can actually listen about the presenter when you're checking out what workshops you want to go to. So this is the end of the show. I hope everybody has a great day. And thanks again, Pam, for being here today.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Well, we'll be back for another show later.